Welcome to Left Out on WRCT 88.3 FM. Left Out is a public affairs program produced by WRCT devoted to news and views from a perspective left out of the mainstream media. I'm Bob Harper.
I'm Danny Slater.
And today's program is produced by Dan O'Neill. Listeners are welcome to call us at 412-268-9728 or 89728 on campus, or we'll also be monitoring electronic mail. Send mail to bob at leftout.info.
We have a couple of, not any specific announcements, but just general announcements. This is the last week of the presidential campaign, and if you want to get involved, now is your chance to do that. There are a couple of ways that we recommend getting involved. You can go to the Move On organization. Phone number there is 412-434-0464. And there's also a link to them. You can go to moveon.org, the webpage. There's other organizations called America Coming Together. There's a link to that on the website, as well as the Kerry campaign. So this is the time. If you want to get involved, it's one more week, and all these organizations are feverishly working, mainly at this point, to get out the vote, because we all know that a huge percentage of people in this country don't vote, and so the goal of all these organizations is to get the vote out this year.
Absolutely. This Saturday, I have a handbill here that saying that Move On is organizing a rally at the Metropole, formerly Metropole, now the Empire, 1630 Smallman Street, 10 a.m. on Saturday. They will be having Leo Girard, the international president of the United Steelworkers, will organizing a rally. You're welcome to go to that. In general, Move On, if you look, is organizing various Get Out the Vote activities, especially this weekend and also on Election Day. So we encourage you all to volunteer with them or the Democratic Party or the Kerry campaign or ACT, any number of organizations to help show Bush the door. We can only hope that that will be the outcome.
So the first topic for today is a remarkable, I thought, speech that Al Gore gave about a week ago on October 18th. And it's one of a series of speeches he's given over the last year or so. This one was at Georgetown University. And we've got some excerpts here of the speech, so I think should we just start with some of the excerpts?
Yeah, Bob? I think it would be great to hear a bit. Gore's perspective in this speech, maybe we can summarize, is to criticize and to really present a very compelling case for the extent to which the Bush administration is driven by a kind of compulsive ideology and that is characterized by a complete and utter disregard for the facts. And those of us who live in what is the quickly becoming famous phrase, the reality-based community, I am a proud member of the reality-based community, are outraged by the extent to which the Bush administration does not live in the reality-based community. And this is part of the message in Gore's campaign. We'll start with the early track. The first track here is some early part of Al Gore's speech at Georgetown.
There are many people in both political parties who worry that there is something deeply troubling about President Bush's relationship to reason, about his disdain for facts, his incuriosity about new information that might produce a deeper understanding of the problems and policies that he wrestles with on behalf of the country. One group mistakenly maligns the president as not being smart enough to have a normal, active curiosity about separating fact from myth. A second group seems to be convinced that his personal religious conversion experience was so profound that he relies on religious faith in place of logical analysis. But I disagree with both of those groups and reject both of those cartoon images. I know President Bush is plenty smart, and while I have no doubt that his religious belief is genuine, and that it's an important motivation for many things that he does in life, as it is for me and for most of you, I'm convinced that most of the president's frequent departures from fact-based analysis have much more to do with right-wing political and economic ideology than with the Bible. And it is crucially important to be precise in describing exactly what it is he believes in so strongly and then insulates from any logical challenge or even debate. It is ideology and not his religious faith that is the source of this troubling inflexibility. Most of the problems President Bush has caused for this country stem not from his belief in God, but from his belief in the infallibility of the right-wing Republican ideology that exalts the interests of the wealthy and of large corporations over and above the interests of the American people. It is love of power for its own sake that is the original sin of this presidency.
That was Al Gore speaking on October 18th at Georgetown University on one of a series of speeches that he's been given, sponsored by Move On PAC, criticizing the Bush administration. This will take a moment. You're welcome to call in and comment or discuss Gore's speech with us by calling at 412-621-9728 or sending mail to bob@leftout.info.
We're going to play a few more excerpts, right?
Yeah, well, there we have a couple of more. Go ahead.
Consequences of the invasion accurately predicted the chaos, popular resentment, and growing likelihood of civil war, and that this analysis was presented to the president, and that other similar analyses were stacked in front of the president's team on the desk in the cabinet room in the White House, even as the president continued to confidently assure America that the aftermath of our invasion would be the speedy establishment of representative democracy and market capitalism by grateful Iraqis.
And I think we have also a third track, if you would play it, please.
John Ashcroft was repeatedly asked by the FBI official in charge of protecting us against terrorism, repeatedly asked to pay attention to the many warning signs that were being picked up by the FBI throughout the summer of 2001. Former FBI Acting Director Thomas J. Pickard, the man in charge of presenting these warnings to General Ashcroft, testified under oath that Ashcroft angrily told him he did not want to hear this information anymore and shut down the discussion. Now, that is an affirmative action by the administration that's very different from simple negligence. That is an extremely serious error in judgment that constitutes a reckless disregard for the safety of the American people.
So this is Al Gore speaking at Georgetown University on October 18th. Those are a few tracks in the beginning of his speech. We have a few more to play later.
Yeah, I just want to comment on that particular track. That's part of a much longer sequence. We didn't have time to play the whole thing, but it's a much longer sequence, kind of stepping through, questioning the kind of standard wisdom that, well, nothing could have been done about 9/11. There wasn't enough information. There was no way to anticipate it. And this is just one aspect of that standard belief. He goes on in the rest of the speech, other parts, to talk about how the really outrage in the way that the fact that Bush did nothing upon receiving the memo that said Bin Laden is determined to attack the United States. That he compared that to what had happened when he was the vice president receiving all the briefings. He said there was never in 8 years a briefing with that level of the threat level. And when they got briefings, which were much lower in scariness than that one, they reacted immediately, convening meetings of all the organizations on a daily basis and really responding to it. So, he develops all of this in other parts of the speech.
Yeah, it's a brilliant speech, and it really goes into categorically, item by item, building a case for the what I would consider to be the obvious fact that this administration is driven by a right-wing ideology that is out of line, out of step with the opinions of the vast majority of Americans, if they knew what the policies of the administration even were. We'll come back to that point a little bit later.
Yeah.
How can there be such a gap? We'll come to that a little bit later. But he is outlining, you know, in great detail, if you summarize, you look back over the last 4 years of the behavior of the Bush administration, that is so characterized by this ideological fervor and a complete and total disregard for the facts. And what is shocking is you might think, well, you know, anyone can disregard the facts at their own peril. But what is shocking is that they're getting away with this because of the control of the right wing control of the media, the constant right wing noise machine broadcasting everything that they say, the brown shirts on television and radio who are just, you know, blathering the Republican talking points, excusing and discounting every bit of evidence to the contrary, every possible bit of evidence to the contrary. And collectively throughout the country, doing the best to make that the only voice you will ever hear. I mean, people are ejected from rallies for wearing a T-shirt that is critical of the Bush administration. Mm. I mean, you know, the whole idea of free speech zones and so on is all devoted to suppressing dissent and denying reality. Mm. And we saw, for example, in the first debate, when Bush looked particularly hapless up there, because he lives in an echo chamber. He's obviously totally clueless about the policies of his administration. And when challenged and criticized, I mean, he was really nonplussed and didn't know how to react because he's used to having his toes licked by the toadies who surround him. And having decisions made by Dick Cheney with him over a private lunch. It's quite interesting to read, for example, Ron Suskind's article in the New York Times week before last about the Bush presidency, in which he describes the processes by which, for example, mm-hmm. there are no discussion whatsoever, that it's characterized now that people who come in to brief the president have a preset amount of time. They come in and say their piece. There is no discussion. The president asks no questions, makes no statements. Because earlier in his administration, he, in one meeting of the National Security Council shortly after he had been inaugurated, wound up insisting that Sweden is a neutral country and has no standing army. And when he was corrected by someone saying, well, you must mean, Mr. President, Switzerland. Switzerland is always historically been neutral and has no standing army, although it does have a National Guard. He said, no, he insisted that it was Sweden that has no army. Well, you know, these are just facts, right? And the fact is Sweden does have an army. And it shows that this guy is butt ignorant. I mean, this guy is unbelievably ignorant. He doesn't
know anything.
But anyway,
that's not exactly the thrust of the
That is not
the
exactly
speech.
The thrust of Gore's speech, which, of course, that's a good bringing me back around. So it's true that the poor fellow is ignorant, but it's a question of don't know, don't want to know. Mm-hmm. And a complete denial of reality. And what has happened quite clearly is that the people surrounding the president, notably Dick Cheney and the other cronies in the Pentagon, have wrapped him in a cocoon because he's helpless. He has no idea. They've got everything orchestrated so that the only person who ever talks to him about any policy matter is Dick Cheney in a private lunch. And then Cheney goes in and tells him what to do quite clearly. And then Bush comes out and signs some directive. Bush has no idea. So, nevertheless, I mean, he's fully responsible for all the decisions. It certainly doesn't excuse him, but it certainly, you know, you can see what's really going on here.
Yeah.
And when you saw in the second debate, or the vice presidential debate, it was perfectly clear, A, who wears the pants around the White House, and B, that Dick Cheney is completely out of touch with reality.
Uh-huh.
And this is really Al Gore's speech. So why don't we listen to a few more tracks from Al Gore's speech? You're welcome to call us at 412-268-9728 or send mail to bob@leftout.info.
It is clear that President Bush has absolute faith in a rigid right-wing ideology and does not feel the same desire that many of us would in gathering facts relevant to the question at hand. He ignores the warning of his experts. He forbids any dissent, never tests. tests his assumptions against the best available evidence. In fact, he is arrogantly out of touch with reality. He refuses to ever admit mistakes, which means that so long as he is our president, we are doomed to repeat his mistakes. It is beyond incompetence. It is recklessness that risks the safety and security of the American people.
Again, that's a beautiful summary of the Bush administration's gross incompetence, and also, just as he says, disregard for the truth, disregard for reality. Mm-hmm. They believe that they can create reality, and the Susskind article is where this famous phrase comes from.
Yeah, he
Susskind
quotes that being, in the next section.
Next thing,
yeah.
Being dismissed. So let's continue with the next track.
In yesterday's New York Times, Ron Susskind related a truly startling conversation with a White House official who was angry that he had written an article in 2002 the White House didn't like. And the senior advisor to Bush told Susskind that reporters like him lived, quote, in what we call the reality-based community. And he denigrated such people for believing that solutions emerge from your judicious study of discernible reality. He went on to say, that's not the way the world really works anymore. When we act, we create our own reality. And while you're studying that reality, judiciously as you will, we'll act again, creating other new realities, which you can study too. And that's how things will sort out. We're history's actors, he said, and you, all of you, will be left to just study what we do. By failing to adjust their policies to unexpected realities, they have made it difficult to carry out any of their policies competently. Indeed, this is the answer to what some have regarded as a mystery. How could a team so skilled in politics be so bumbling and incompetent when it comes to policy? The truth is that the same insularity and zeal that makes them effective at smash-mouth politics makes them terrible at governing. The Bush-Cheney administration is a rarity in American history. It is simultaneously dishonest and incompetent. And not coincidental. The first audits of the massive sums flowing through the U.S. authorities in Iraq now show not only with money appropriated by Congress, but also from the Iraqi oil revenues, that billions of dollars have disappeared with absolutely no record of where it went, to whom, for what, or when. And charges of massive corruption are now widespread. Just as the appointment of industry lobbyists to key positions in agencies that oversee their former employers results in a kind of institutionalized corruption in the abandonment of law enforcement and regulations at home, the outrageous decision to brazenly violate the law in granting sole source, no-bid contracts worth billions of dollars to Vice President Cheney's company, Halliburton, which still pays him money every year, has convinced many observers that incompetence, cronyism, and corruption have played a significant role in undermining U.S. policy in Iraq.
So that's Al Gore at Georgetown University, October 18th. We have a caller on the line. Caller, go ahead, please.
Yes, this is Paul in Edgewood.
Hi.
You were talking before about move-on events, and if there are people listening who would like to volunteer to help get out the vote, there's a specific event they might want to come to tomorrow evening. That's Wednesday evening in Regent Square. Move-on is going to run a little canvassing training session. So if you've got a few hours between now and voting Tuesday, November 2nd, if you come to this event at 6 p.m. at Caterbean Coffee Shop, 1110 South Braddock, tomorrow evening, you can get a quick little training. They'll talk to you about how to walk around the neighborhood and talk to people, find out who they're planning to vote for. And the whole goal of this is to help maximize the turnout of Kerry voters on Election Day.
Thanks. That's great. I had that on my list to mention. I'm glad you brought that up. That's good. If you wish to volunteer for doing canvassing, then the Move On organization event is tomorrow. I think you can also get in touch with the Democratic Party. I went to a training session on Sunday for that, for helping out on Election Day. And if you get in touch with the Pittsburgh Democratic Party, I'm sure that they can direct you as well to how you might help out on Tuesday, where a lot of help is needed for everything from driving people around to being a poll monitor to doing canvassing in neighborhoods and so forth.
Great. Yeah, it would be sad if Pennsylvania went to Bush by 500 votes or so the way things went in 2000.
Yeah, let's hope not. I think there's a good chance, and if we work hard enough, I think we can keep Pennsylvania in the Democratic column, and that will be critical for Kerry's victory next week.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Sure.
See you then.
Okay, this is Left Out on WRCT. You can call us at 412-268-9728. We're listening to a speech by Al Gore. We're listening to excerpts of a speech given by Al Gore last week at Georgetown University. We have one more track to go, and then we'd be happy to take your calls, and we have a bunch of other topics to discuss as well.
An increasing number of Republicans, including veterans of the Reagan White House, and even including the father of the conservative movement, are now openly expressing dismay over the epic failures of the Bush presidency. Doug Bandow, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, a veteran of both the Heritage Foundation and the Reagan White House, wrote recently in Salon.com, and I quote, "Serious conservatives
must fear for the country if Bush is reelected. Based on the results," he went on to write, "based on the results of his presidency, a Bush victory would be catastrophic. Conservatives," he went on, "should choose principles over power." He seemed most concerned about Bush's unhealthy habits of mind, saying, and I quote again, "he does not appear to reflect on his actions and seems unable to concede even the slightest mistake, nor is he willing to hold anyone else responsible for anything. It is," he concluded, "a damning combination," end quote. Bandow described the Bush foreign policy as, and I quote, "a shambles, with Iraq aflame and America increasingly reviled by friend and foe alike." The conservative co-host of Crossfire, Tucker Carlson, said about Bush's Iraq policy, and I quote, "I think it is a total nightmare and disaster, and I am ashamed that I went against my own instincts in supporting it." William F. Buckley, Jr., widely acknowledged as the founder of the modern conservative movement in America, wrote of the Iraq War, and I quote, "If I knew then what I know now about what kind of situation we would be in, I would have opposed the war." A former Republican governor of Minnesota, Elmer Anderson, announced in Minneapolis that for the first time in his life, he was abandoning the Republican Party in this election because Bush and Cheney, in his words, "believe their own spin. Both men spew outright untruths with evangelistic fervor," end quote. He attributed his switch to President Bush's, quote, "misguided and blatantly false misrepresentations of the threat of weapons of mass destruction." The terror seat, he said, was Afghanistan. Iraq had no connection to these acts of terror, was not a serious threat to the United States, as this president claimed, and there was no relation, it is now obvious, to any serious weaponry. Governor Anderson was also offended, he said, by Bush's, quote, "phony posturing as cocksure leader of the free world," period, end quote. Now, Anderson and many other Republicans are joining with Democrats and millions of independents this year in proudly supporting the Kerry Edwards ticket. In every way, John Kerry and John Edwards represent an approach to governing that is the opposite of the Bush-Cheney approach. Where Bush remains out of touch, Kerry is a proud member of the reality-based community. where Bush will bend to his corporate backers, Kerry stands strongly with the public interest. My friends, there are now 15 days left before our country makes this fateful choice for us and the whole world. And it is particularly crucial for one final reason. The last feature of Bush's ideology involves ducking accountability for his mistakes. He has neutralized accountability by the Congress by intimidating the Republican leadership and transforming the Republican majority into a true rubber stamp, unlike any that has ever existed in American history. He has appointed right-wing judges who have helped to insulate him from accountability in the courts. And if he wins again, he will likely get to appoint up to 4 Supreme Court justices. He has ducked accountability from the press with his obsessive secrecy and refusal to conduct the public's business openly. So there is now only one center of power left in our Constitution and in our country, capable of at long last holding George W. Bush accountable. And it is you, the voters. There are 15 days left. Help me and help John Kerry and John Edwards take our country back. Thank you.
Hear, hear. So that was Al Gore speaking at Georgetown University a week ago on October 18th as part of a series of speeches that he's given over the last year criticizing the Bush administration's policies, and a speech that I think forms a compelling case for throwing Bush out of office.
Yeah, really. You can hear the whole speech. You can hear it on C-SPAN, and you can also hear it on the audio file on the leftout.info website, where you can listen to the whole thing. And I highly recommend that because we were able to just touch on a few points, and he really develops the whole thing really coherently and in a way that we can't do in a short few excerpts. So a couple of things about that. One thing in an excerpt I don't think we got was that the fact that he was given all kinds of CIA reports pretty much predicting the exact set of events that would that did in fact unfold after the invasion.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And if you listen to the conservatives, he was quoting a second ago saying, if I had known what was going to happen, I never would have supported this. Well, Bush did know what was going to happen, though. That was in the reports that he got from the State Department, intelligence agencies, and so on about what was going to happen.
That he and Condi got, and they knew, and they cherry-picked and manipulated the intelligence. In fact, if you look in the Left Out webpage, I've added a link to a new report from Senator Carl Levin's office that analyzes the intelligence leading up to the invasion of Iraq, and in particular documents very carefully and thoroughly the means by which Douglas Feith of the Office of Special Plans manipulated the intelligence that went into the arguments in favor of the invasion of Iraq, and how that information was sent to the Senate Armed Services Committee, which is Levin is the ranking minority member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, and how that was used to manipulate the intelligence and promote the predetermined aims of the Bush administration.
Yeah.
And it makes extremely clear, this article makes extremely clear, that the Bush claim, which is they seem to be largely getting away with, is that, oh, well, you know, hindsight is 20/20. This is Monday morning quarterbacking, I heard
right.
on the radio.
This is what they
today,
say, yes.
When, in fact, it is nothing of the kind. This is a total fraud that was perpetrated on the U.S. government, on the U.S. Population, and that was perpetrated on the world in a full and deliberate attempt to impose a policy that had been predetermined for at least 10 years before any of the events that supposedly precipitated it happened.
Another example that I liked from the speech, I didn't put the excerpt here, but it was about the aluminum tubes, where basically that they told the experts at Oak Ridge, which is Oak Ridge National Lab in Tennessee, which has the world's greatest experts on uranium what's it called when they separate the
centrifuge,
the heavy from the light. There's a refinement that those guys, they were told
enrichment.
They were enrichment, right?
Yeah.
They were muzzled. A directive came down from above saying nobody at that lab is allowed to discuss this issue because these tubes were not for enrichment because they had nothing to do with them. They were just the wrong design for enrichment, and those guys knew that. But this myth about the tubes was used in Colin Powell, I think the State of the Union address, as well as Colin Powell's speech to the UN about these aluminum tubes, which were used for uranium enrichment.
And numerous statements by Condi
and
Dick Cheney.
Right. And so the fact that they were muzzling these people makes it clear that it was a deliberate deception.
That's
it was
right.
Not just, oh, we weren't sure what they were for. Maybe they were for centrifuges. No, it was a deliberate deception, a deliberate lie that was being told.
It is a fraud. It is a fraud. It is a crime. It is an impeachable offense. These guys should be prosecuted and jailed, in my opinion. They certainly should be driven out of office. It's very important what you're saying, Danny. I agree with that wholeheartedly. These allegations, that somehow the story that, oh, they did their best with the data they had available, it's all the CIA's fault, it's all hindsight, is complete nonsense. This is part of the big lie. It's a big lie.
Right, but the mainstream media really is not.
They buy into all of
this.
Yeah,
right.
They buy into all of
this. It's easy
to. And why does Kerry, for example, not say these things? Why does he not say openly, these things are big lies? These are facts. And here's Levin's report. It's a very detailed report talking about Douglas Feith's role in developing what we now know as Feith-based intelligence that was used to perpetrate the fraud on the American public to justify the war in Iraq, which was clearly predetermined.
We've been talking about this for a long time.
We have talked about Douglas Feith.
Karen
Kotowski was
who worked
in the Office of Special Plans, and she told us about this, and we've been reading about it and been saying it for quite a long time. And again, that always brings it back to the central point for us, which is, we do this part time as a hobby. It's not that hard to figure this kind of stuff out. A professional journalist who's worth anything at all could trivially figure these things out and report on them, but they don't. And the question is why? And I know the answer to this, I think, but the fact is they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the greatest threat to the Republic, the greatest threat to the United States, is the absolute failure of journalism, the failure to report the facts, the failure to say the vice president is lying. What the vice president is saying is absolutely contrary to fact.
Yeah.
This is just...
They can't do that.
They can't do that.
It's not possible in a mainstream publication that you just won't read that.
Or television news, nothing.
Yeah.
You will not. It's all he said, she said. It's all the same. Everything is equally valid.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Oh, right.
It's all just a matter
Kerry
of
Kerry said this
opinion.
And Bush said this and then Kerry said this.
Oh, it's all just a matter of opinion. There are no facts.
Right.
So even though Susskind was accused of being and demeaned for being a member of the reality-based community, the fact is that the journalists at large really do not engage reality, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They, in fact, play along with the charade. And it's just very minor outlets. It's people like us who are, on the fringes, on the far fringes, or people like Greg Palast writing from Britain. There's very minor outlets which even dare to say what the truth is. And these things, as I say, even if we could sit here and discuss in a reasonable level the exact interpretation of all of these facts, first of all, let's get the facts on the table. Then we can talk about what the interpretation of them is. And it's even possible we could disagree about what the interpretation of them is. But first of all, let's deal with reality. And the emphasis and the thrust of Gore's speech is the extent to which these people are driven by an ideology that overrides reality, an arrogance that involves completely denying reality, and that it allows them in a control of the press and an embedding with corporations that allows them to create reality. And this is the most outrageous and the most threatening aspect.
So we're getting we're getting excited here. But the things are reaching a fever pitch with the election and
all the terrible
things that are happening. First of all, let me mouse the phone number. It's 412-621-9728. You're listening to Left Out on WRCT. You can give us a call to discuss these or other topics. Should we take a musical
break?
Let's take a short musical break, and we'll be back.